why you should be present wherever it occurs. We've got two lessons along this line already, and it's been a couple of weeks, 3 weeks since the lesson number two. But lesson number three now, why you should be present for every service, is to imitate Jesus and others. And of course, we realize that there may be times when you just can't make it. We've talked about that, but we're talking now about the intention of being here and being here when you can for the services. And sometimes people just, well, you know, I don't think I'll go today. Such a pretty day, I think I'll go play golf, or I think I'll go out on the lake, or they make conscious decisions to do something else that they think they'll enjoy more than going and joining into the worship of God at a duly appointed time where they are members of a local church. That's the sort of thing we're talking about. We should be willing to do that. We should make every service we can to imitate Jesus and others, as well as the other two reasons we've already mentioned. First of all, saints should imitate the apostles. Over in 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 11, Paul wrote, "Imitate me just as I also imitate Christ." The apostle Paul, we know and understand, was, prior to becoming a Christian, one of the greatest enemies of Christian discipleship. One of the greatest enemies of the Lord's church and churches. And went everywhere persecuting Christians, calling them blasphemers. They were all Jews at that particular time, and he was bringing them back from various cities to Jerusalem to stand trial for blasphemy, or in some cases he just washed the coats of those who stoned the Christians, such as in the case of Stephen. And there were others besides Stephen that were put to death with Paul's approval prior to his becoming a Christian. But when he realized that it was he rather than the Christians who was guilty of blasphemy, he repented. He became not just a disciple of Christ, but an apostle of Christ and of God. And for the rest of his life, he imitated Christ. And I don't know that I can point to anything in his life that was a sin, although he continued to think of himself as the chief of sinners because of his previous antagonism toward the Lord and the Lord's church. But at the time Paul wrote 1 Corinthians, he was still striving to imitate Christ. And again, I don't know the time that he wasn't striving to do that. And we ought to follow his example in that. Over in Philippians chapter 3 and verse 17, he says, "Brethren, join in following my example and note those who so walk as you have us for a pattern." And so here were the apostles in their obedience, in their imitation of Christ, they established a pattern for us to follow. And it says, "Follow my example." You join in that. There were others who were following his example. And he wants the brethren at Philippi to join in following his example. And he also wanted them to note those who so walk as you have us for a pattern. That is, you call attention to them and make sure everybody knows, yes, here's a faithful saint who is following the example set by the Apostle Paul and other apostles. You note those persons. You don't just ignore their example. Of following the example of Paul, and they become examples themselves. In chapter 4 and verse 9 of Philippians, "The things which you learned and received and heard and saw in me, these do. And the God of peace will be with you." And so whatever we see in Paul that is right, that's what we ought to be imitating Paul and the other apostles. And we see they were very dedicated to the cause of Christ. They looked for and took advantage of opportunities to not only worship Christ in collective services such as this, but they look for those opportunities to serve God outside of those services. On his first missionary journey, whenever Paul hit a new town and those with him, where is there a synagogue? If there wasn't one, well, where do the Jews meet? And he would find out, and he would go, and he would be with them, and he would preach to them, encourage them. Even sitting in the synagogues on the Sabbath day, sitting there very reverently, not trying to disrupt anything. So then I asked if you have any words of encouragement, say on, and he would, and he would talk to them about the Messiah for whom they had been looking historically for a century, and how that Jesus was that Messiah. And sometimes he would be very effective and very fruitful in his labors, not always. Sometimes the only thing he had to show for his effort was a few more marks on his body. Marks left by stones that were hurled at him for the purpose of killing him, for example, in the city of Lystra, where after he had gone through Antioch of Pisidia and Iconium, and then had gone over here to Lystra and was preaching there, Jews from Antioch, not satisfied that he had left there, came over to Iconium and got people that were not satisfied that he had left there, and they all went over to Lystra, dragged Paul out of the city, stoned him, left him for dead. He didn't die. And the brethren brought him back into the city. He recovered the next day. He went over to the further city, further east of Derbe, and preached the gospel there. Then came back through, visiting the disciples, the churches that he had helped to establish, and encouraging them that through much tribulation we must enter the kingdom of God. And it's a long time before I put that verse together with the verse just a few verses earlier about him having been stoned. And we need to follow his example and the example of the other apostles, such as James, the Lord's brother, who was killed by Herod with a sword. And Peter, of course, another one whose example we should follow, except, of course, the example where he withdrew himself from the Gentiles for the sake of prejudice. We need not follow that example. Even the Apostle Paul called him to task on that and rebuked him to his face. But generally, we should follow the example of the Apostle. Saints also should imitate faithful elders and preachers. Well, how do you know who the faithful elders and preachers are? Well, those are the elders and the preachers that are imitating the Apostles. Sometimes we don't really, I mean, we don't today, certainly, have the apostles before us in the flesh, three dimensions. But you know, we do have the account of their actions here. But even in the first century, the apostles couldn't be everywhere. But everywhere they had established a congregation, or everywhere they had preached where there were saints, there were people there, elders and preachers and others who were following their example, who were imitating them, and they should be imitated, faithful elders and preachers, and we know of those today. I've often asked people, and I think it's obvious, how can you tell if a person is faithful? Is it just because they say, oh, I believe? That's because you see their faith in their lives. That's what James said. You show me your faith without your works. I'll show you my faith by my works. I like what A.C. Grider said one time. You can't even begin to show your faith without your works. He gave the illustration of his uncle making him mad one time, his brother's uncle. His uncle said, I can do something you can't do, A.C. And he said, there ain't nothing you can do that I can't do. His uncle sat on the ground and said, spit out of my mouth. And of course, he had to acknowledge he couldn't do that. Well, it's just as impossible to show your faith without your works as it is to spit out of somebody else's mouth. You can't do it. And the only way anybody can see your faith is by looking at your works. And they see that you are imitating the apostles who imitated Jesus. And then people will imitate you if their heart and mind is right with God. And we are told to do that. Hebrews 6:11-12, we desire that each one of you show the same diligence to the full assurance of hope until the end, that you do not become sluggish, but imitate those who through faith and patience inherit the promises. Well, he hasn't yet talked about the heroes of faith in chapter 11. He's talking about people they know. He's talking about their elders and their preachers there in the congregation at Jerusalem. In chapter 13 and verse 7, he says, remember those who rule over you, who have spoken the word of God to you, whose faith follow, considering the outcome of their conduct. Now, you don't follow their doctrine if they're teaching something different, but you do follow their conduct and their faith when it reflects what Jesus and the apostles said and did. And that's one of the things Peter says over in 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 2 through 4, talking to the elders of among the saints to whom he's writing, "Shepherd the flock of God which is among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion, but willingly, not for dishonest gain, but eagerly, not as being lords over those who entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the crown of glory that does not fade away." Here's the responsibility of elders, shepherds. Well, one of which is to be examples to the flock. Well, why are elders told to be examples to the flock? So the flock can look at them. The sheep in their flock can look to them to see how to live their lives, to see how to conduct themselves, how to reflect the faith that they have as a result of the teaching that the elders have done, so they can reflect it in their lives just as the elders reflect it in their lives. That's the part of the work of elders, and we should appreciate that. Where there are elders, we don't have elders, but we do have older men. Well, I've got one older man, no, two older men now to look up to. Some of you got three, some of you got four. Depending on who you are and how old you are. And we look to these men and women, to the example that they set, if they are indeed following, imitating the elders and preachers who are imitating the apostles. In 1 Timothy 4, verse 12, Paul writes, "Let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word, in conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, in purity." Timothy wasn't an elder, he was an evangelist, he was a preacher. He was to be an example. He was not only to teach by his words, he was to teach by his actions. Why is that? Well, because actions speak louder than words. And people can see what you do a lot clearer than they can hear what you say. Oftentimes, they pay little attention to what you say because of what they see in your actions. Someone has said, "What you're saying, I cannot hear because what you are doing is ringing so loudly in my ears." Well, if evangelists are to be examples, then others are to follow their example. They are to imitate the faith of those preachers who are imitating the apostles and the elders and preachers. Well, some should also imitate Jesus. And Jesus, of course, is our primary example. And that's who the elders are following. That's who the apostles were following, imitating. And so we should imitate Jesus. And, you know, there's been the saying around, you know, based on the book by Charles Shedd, "What Would Jesus Do?" You got your bracelets, you know, with all the charms and WWJD. What would Jesus do? And it's all speculation about what Jesus would do, and this is that circumstance. What would be better is WWJS. What did Jesus say? And what did Jesus do? WDJD. What did Jesus do? Not what would Jesus do. What did he say? What did he do? That's our most important example. For this, you were called because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example, that you should follow his steps, who committed no sin, nor was deceit found in his mouth, who, when he was reviled, did not revile in turn. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously, who himself bore our sins in his own body on the tree, that we, having died to sin, might live for righteousness, by whose stripes you were healed. No deceit found in his mouth. When he was reviled, he did not revile in turn. What do we do when we are reviled? When people speak evil of us, when people call us names, and some of our own brethren call us names. They may not have called you this or that name to your face, but some of our own brethren refer to us as Antis, orphan haters, people who are against every good work, and we're only against those works that are unauthorized. Yeah, they call us names. Some of our own brethren are more likely to fellowship people in the denominations than they are to fellowship us. And it's a sad thing. But what should we do? Revile it? No, we shouldn't revile him in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten. What do we do when we suffer for righteousness' sake? According to Peter, we should count it joy. And be willing to suffer shame for his name. Instead of threatening, he committed himself to him who judges like. Well, that's what we should do. Imitate Jesus. In Galatians chapter 2 and verse 20, I have been crucified with Christ, Paul says. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. In what way did Christ live in Paul? Was he literally inside Paul? No. Paul was imitating Christ. Paul was living his life the way Christ had lived his life, a life of obedience, a life of faith, a life of service. No longer I live, but Christ lives in me, and the life which I now live. See, when he says, it is no longer I who live, he's not being literal there, he's being figurative, because then he says, the life which I now live in the flesh, so he was still living in his body, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. That second half of that sentence is the explanation of the first half. Christ lives in us if and to the extent that we live by faith in him. And we live by faith in him if and to the extent that we understand that he loved us and gave himself for us. In Matthew chapter 4 and verse 23, Jesus went about all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and healing all kinds of sickness and all kinds of disease among the people. Why did he do that? Well, he cared. He cared enough to empty himself as deity. He didn't empty himself as deity. He didn't empty himself of deity. But he emptied himself and came to the earth as a man. Born into this world just like we are, except that he had no earthly father, no biological father. And when he grew to his adulthood and when he entered his ministry, he went about all Galilee teaching in their synagogues, preaching the gospel of the kingdom. Of course, he was preaching that the kingdom is coming. We are to preach that the kingdom is here and that it can be entered by a new birth, which Jesus referred to when he talked to Nicodemus. And when he healed all kinds of diseases, sickness and all kinds of disease among the people, yes, that was a manifestation of compassion, but it also was a means whereby he confirmed that he was who he was. Not just the Son of Man. He was the Son of Man. So he wasn't the Son of a man. I take that verse means, and that passage, that word, that phrase, Son of Man, to imply that he was the epitome of man. He was all that God expects of a man. But he was also the Son of God. He came forth from God. Born into this world through a virgin, partook of flesh, never sinned. Now, the Bible does say in Hebrews chapter 4, he was tempted in all points like as we. That does not mean that he was tempted to commit every sin any more than you and I are tempted to commit every sin. There are some sins I've never been tempted to commit. But I've been tested. I've been tested many times and I've failed many of those tests over the years, which is why I needed to be saved. you have failed some of those tests, which is why you needed to be saved or need to be saved. Jesus never failed a test. Whenever he was tested, he rose to the occasion, made application of the Word of God to the situation, and continued to live without sin. But he went about, he got tired. There were times when he and the apostles had to get away from the crowd. They went across the Sea of Galilee to get away from the crowd so they could rest, and the crowd followed them over there. They just couldn't seem to get it. Well, wasn't any Chaldon back then, you know. Chaldon will take you away, but wasn't any Chaldon. They just had to, you know, rest where they could and when they could. Over in Matthew chapter 9 and verse 35, then Jesus went about all the cities and villages teaching in their synagogues, preaching the gospel of the kingdom and healing every sickness and every disease among the people. And that may have been, I forgot to change the verse on that one, but it probably said about the same thing. In Matthew 13, verse 54, and when he had come to his own country, he taught them in the synagogue. He comes back to Galilee, the area of Nazareth and Cana and Capernaum. He taught them in the synagogue so that they were astonished and said, where did this man get this wisdom and these mighty words? You remember that when Philip, back in John chapter 1, went to get Nathanael and tell him, you know, we have discovered the Messiah. He's Jesus of Nazareth. I don't know if you remember Nathanael's response. Well, how can any good thing come out of Nazareth? And there were no colleges in Nazareth. Nazareth was not known as a great center of learning. It was a fishing village. Or close by, just a little hobble of a town. Just a backwater town, you might say. Well, Jesus didn't need an education as a member of the Godhead. So, now, they didn't understand, and they belittled him somewhat. Where did he get this wisdom, these mighty words? How did he get so smart all of them? In Matthew 18:20, for where two or three are gathered together in my name, I am there in the midst of them. He's right here, if we are indeed, and I believe we are, gathered together in his name, that is, by his authority. He's here with us. If he's here with us, then all of us who are here have taken advantage of an opportunity to be with him. And those who chose not to be here, not those who couldn't be here, those who chose not to be here turned down an opportunity to be with Jesus. He's here. Every time we are here in his name or by his authority. In Luke 4, 15 through 16, he taught in their synagogues, being glorified by all. So he came up to Nazareth. Now, that first statement is in Jerusalem. So he came to Nazareth where he had been brought up, and as his custom was, he went to the synagogue on the Sabbath day and stood up for it. That was his custom. Seeing Jesus in the synagogue wasn't a rare thing. They were accustomed to seeing him there. If Jesus wasn't in the synagogue in Nazareth, they knew, on the Sabbath day, they knew that he was somewhere there. And that he was in the synagogue if he wasn't sick. And I don't know if Jesus ever got sick. He may have. We're not told. But I sure get the impression anytime he could be in the synagogue on the Sabbath day, wherever he was in that synagogue. And there were synagogues all over Judea and Galilee. I don't reckon there were any in Samaria because those were Samaritans. I don't know if they had. But there were synagogues all over the Roman Empire because of the captivity of the kingdom of Judah by the Babylonians. Where Paul went, where is the synagogue? That was his custom. People were accustomed to seeing him there. And he stood up. In that particular passage, by the way, he stood up and read from Isaiah, a prophecy concerning himself, and said, this day is this prophecy fulfilled in your hearing. They didn't know what to make of that. Finally, in John 18, verse 20, Jesus answered him, I spoke openly to the world, talking to Pilate. I have taught in synagogues and in the temple where the Jews always meet. And in secret I have said nothing. They're asking him about his teaching. Look, my teaching is common knowledge. I talk publicly. Now, there came a time, then that last night, he had some private instructions for his apostles. John 14, 15, and 16, oftentimes referred to that material as the Lord's farewell discourse. But prior to that, his disciples, every time his disciples heard him teach, the people heard him teach. And, oh, there were things that he would say that taught lessons as they were going from one place to another. But his teaching was always done in public, in the synagogues, in the temple, wherever there were Jews accumulated. Jesus saw an opportunity to teach. And every time he saw an opportunity to teach, guess what he did? He took advantage of that opportunity. That's what we need to learn how to do. Look for and recognize opportunities to teach the gospel. Now, even if we don't have an opportunity to teach verbally,